Well, good morning, everybody. My voice just cracked. Well, good morning, everyone. Good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is 3K12 Education Talk Radio on February 9th, 2022, and it's a pleasure to have you here today. My voice does sound a little crackly today, I got to tell you, all right? What can I tell you? It's winter here in Maine where I live, and I'm looking out at piles of snow, all right? And I hope it's nicer where you are, but the weather's up in the 50s. High 40s, early 50s, low, I can't talk today. High 40s, low 50s these days, so hopefully it'll stay that way for a while. We'll get some melt around here. We got a nice show for you today. From CETA, the State Ed Tech Directors Association, we have Julia Benincosa Lague, okay, and Julia is the State E-Rate and Emergency Connectivity Fund Coordinator with the West Virginia Department of Education. She's been doing that for the last 17 years. It's her 25th year in education. She's a CETA board member. We love CETA. And also, she is the State Leader of the Year Award winner for 2021 last year. So congratulations, Julia. I'll bring you on in just a second, and we're going to talk about all the wonderful things you do every day, how states operate with ed tech, and how CETA operates. It's going to be a nice show. All right, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's our home website for Equity and Access. We are the voice of Equity and Access, the voice of the American Consortium for Equity and Education. Again, ace-ed.org. Brand new issue of our Equity and Access Journal is up there. It's a good issue, all about SEL, social-emotional learning, and equity, and that's up there right now. You can flip through it at ace-ed.org. All our podcasts are over there, as this one will be, and you can link to SEL Today, the Social Emotional Learning, seltoday.org, our other website. All right, so we got all kinds of good stuff over there. Check it all out, ace-ed.org. Enough of me yapping here. Let's bring on Julia. Hey, we made it, Julia. Welcome to today's show.
Thanks for having me, Larry. I'm happy to be here.
I'm thrilled to be here. We were going to do the show last week. We had a little mix-up on timing and all that, so we were able, thank God, to do it today, and I'm really glad you're here today. How's the weather in Goodall? Are you in Charleston? Where are you?
I am in Charleston. We're expecting a high of 55 today, so I'm hoping the real feel is going to be like closer to 60. That would be awesome. Our snow is melting, too.
Yeah. How much do you have? What's on the ground in Charleston? Okay.
Oh, it's just in the shady areas at this point now. Right. Like everywhere else is green again.
No. Here in Maine, where I live, everything is white. Okay. It's just a foot of snow covering everything, and a lot more where it's plowed. But it's nice to get a little bit of melt. We're going up into the high 40s and low 50s today too. It's just amazing for a February day. So we'll all enjoy the warm weather. I got to tell you, although, Julia, but if you want, you can come up here and ice skate on my driveway.
Believe my God. Not a skater.
We need a Zamboni. Yeah. We need a Zamboni. Okay. Talk to me. You know, by the way, congratulations. You're the State Leader of the Year Award winner for 2021 from CETA. That's a big deal. That's a huge deal.
Yeah, I'm really honored because the impact that CETA has on the educational community at large is just amazing, and to have been picked by my peers to receive this award. Sorry, you're contagious there with the talking.
Oh yeah, I can't talk today. Yeah,
it's been a real honor.
It's okay. Yeah,
sounds good.
It is a real honor, and you deserve it. Okay, and I think it's just great. All right, and while we're on the subject, just to tell everybody what the State Ed Tech Directors Association, that's CETA, SETDA.org, okay, tell everybody about your work with the association, all right, and then talk about, you just mentioned, I was going to ask you about that, about the impact of the state's Ed Tech Department on schools and school districts. Go ahead. Go for it.
All right. So CETA is an association that represents the United States and the territories in educational technology, and it supports digital learning leaders as well. And the priorities of the organization include equity of access, digital content, interoperability, professional learning, digital learning. We have a collaborative for E-Rate and the Emergency Connectivity Fund as well. as well as a new cybersecurity collaborative. So it's supporting all of the very important things that we have to deal with at the state levels, and the impact is huge. It's been a lifeline during the pandemic, especially to help keep us apprised on what's happening on the national level. During the pandemic relief funding, it was hard to keep track of the alphabet soup. And so, you know, they helped everybody keep all the information straight on all the rules and things that we had to deal with the U.S. Department of Education, FCC, legislative updates, just keeps us kind of in the loop about everything that's going on. And it's also a safe space where the states can talk about all the issues they're facing and how other states have addressed the concern, and what innovations are happening that, you know, we can tap into to help improve things, you know, that may be an issue in our state. And between the CETA colleagues and the research that the organization does, they try to keep us as up-to-date as possible. And they've got committees within the organization that serve all their members, like a membership engagement, professional learning, state action, strategic partnerships with some of the vendors and companies that are in the ed tech vertical. And then I already mentioned the E-Rate and the cybersecurity group, but the cybersecurity is a brand new, and privacy, it's a brand new collaborative, and that is like bleeding edge. Everybody's trying to figure out how to keep their students safe, their staff, their networks, and so that I think is going to be a huge, huge important program that CETA is working on right now, because I don't know if anybody's seen the news, but, you know, those attacks that happened trying to get people's credentials and take down networks and hold data hostage is really
ransomware.
Right. It's really critical right now that we are educated and proactive in preparing and preventing those kind of issues. So I'm in my first year on the CETA board, and I know that they're planning a lot of other great things. For the next few years, they're re-envisioning where the organization can best serve its members. So I'm really excited to be part of that. And the fact that they are constantly looking for ways to serve the membership and education as a whole is just, it's an amazing thing to be a part of.
Yeah, and, you know, we hear the ransomware, you know, there was that oil company, that pipeline company that got ransomware, and some other companies, but it happens to school districts all the time. It happens to school districts all the time, and that's really scary because they just blackmail people. We'll take away everything you need in terms of electronics, okay, in terms of technology, unless you give us $2 million. And that everybody, that's $2 million of your money, okay, that's taxpayer money. All right, it's absolutely unbelievable, and that's why this stuff is so important to be on top of this. So that is key. And also, you mentioned E-Rate. Whenever I hear E-Rate, my friend John Harrington over at Funds for Learning, you know John probably.
I talked to him
the other day. He's one of my favorite people, and they're the E-Rate consulting firm, and I know they've worked very, very hard to get all this, get us all through the pandemic, et cetera. John goes way outside of his company to do good things there. I want to talk to you. You know, you mentioned equity, access, interoperability, and all this came to the top of the line, okay, when the pandemic hit. And just off the top of your head or anecdotally or however, and you can answer this in two ways, how are we doing nationally on the equity question and the access question? We realized how bad we were before, okay? And then also, how's West Virginia doing? You can answer that any way you want. Yes.
Okay, so I think nationally we still have a long way to go. You know, E-Rate is still working on getting all of the schools connected to fiber. And the home access was something that everybody was thinking about and talking about, but really it didn't have the impetus that getting schools onto fiber and having high bandwidth connections did at the time. And then when the pandemic hit, everything just like came to a screeching halt.
Yep.
And everyone had to pivot on a dime. And, you know, part of the problem in a lot of places where if you can't get it to the schools, how are you going to get it to the kids? Especially rural areas. We still have issues in urban areas as well. But you know, there's really the funding gap is part of the problem. You know, our digital divide years ago was having student devices Not everybody even had one-to-one before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And because of all of the money flowing from the federal government, you know, at least in West Virginia, we were able to get all of our students one-to-one now with a device in their hands.
Good.
And so that was, you know, very beneficial. My concern is sustainability. West Virginia does invest a lot of money in technology, and, you know, that money has been, you know, working towards that goal in a systemic way, but it wasn't able to, like, hit everybody all at once. And now we have all of the devices. So my concern is sustainability for the places that don't have investments from the state level to ensure that every kid can keep a one-to-one ratio with their devices. At least here, and I know that there were several other rural states, and again, I know it's still an urban issue, but it's a little more painful here rurally because, you know, in urban areas, a lot of times it's the money, but in
mm-hmm.
rural areas, there's just no connectivity and access
yeah.
available.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I know that Jessica Rosenworcel, she's a friend of West Virginia. She's been here for broadband summits, and we
yeah,
really
the
enjoyed the time that we've spent
she's
with
good.
Her. Yes.
Yeah,
she
good.
Is the chairwoman now. And
I didn't even realize that. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Finally,
she's
somebody absolutely competent makes it to the top. I love it. God bless the government for doing something right for a change. Yeah.
And she's the first female chair of the FCC, so I'm really excited about that as well.
You should be, because that means we'll actually get something done. That's good news. Yeah.
Well, I'm a little biased, but she has long said that we need to bridge the connectivity divide that there is with students having access at home. And so I'm really excited that she's at the helm now and that we can actually, you know, start looking at ways that we can do that. And when the Emergency Connectivity Fund first came out, you know, that was a great way to get things started. And so we encouraged all of our districts to apply. There was also the Emergency Broadband Benefit, or EBB,
mm-hmm.
that's now changed to the ACP, and we've got all of these acronyms floating around, but that one basically is it pays $30 a month now towards the phone bills for the families to sign up and get connectivity, but they have to be financially eligible. In the Emergency Connectivity Fund, or ECF, that one, they just have to lack access, and so I think that's been a real help in making sure that any of the students who weren't able to get connected before the FCC got the program stood up for the ECF, that weren't able to get connected with the Emergency Broadband Benefit, we were able to then, you know, leverage those monies. And, you know, some of my districts refreshed devices. Some of them used it to get one-to-one devices for the first time. The majority of West Virginia, and I know that John Harrington came out with a survey, not a survey, but some data that said that the majority was focused on devices throughout the nation. And I found that really interesting that West Virginia, 75% of our requests were for broadband. So I was pleased that, you know, we've done a lot of work with that state legislative money to make sure between that and the relief money that the devices were not really the focus during Emergency Connectivity Fund. It was, well, let's get this broadband out. So the hard thing is the quick and easy way to apply for these funds are hotspots, but they're not the solution everywhere. They're not going to work everywhere in rural West Virginia. You know, I think we still have a way to go because there's some places that we don't have any kind of connectivity available. Satellite's really expensive. If the families try to go for satellite service in the EBB program, you know, $50 a month is what it was. Now it's $30 a month. That's not going to touch satellite service. And so we've really need to continue looking at ways that we can work towards having, you know, fiber out so that we can get connectivity to the homes. And,
yeah,
you know, our governor in West Virginia, Jim Justice, has dedicated some of the relief money and some state money, and he is working towards getting fiber built out to the homes, and that's a focus for him. And it is something that, you know, West Virginia definitely can benefit from, because there is still a digital divide when it comes to broadband connectivity, and it's not just here. It's
everywhere.
Rural,
yeah.
It's urban, it's everywhere, and so we still have a long way to go, unfortunately.
Yeah, we're not picking on West Virginia. You happen to be in West Virginia, okay?
Right.
It is my state, Maine example, but it's typical when, you know, you say rural. All right,
mm-hmm.
And people, oh, West Virginia, they think of West Virginia or Kentucky or something like that. A lot of New York is rural. A lot of Pennsylvania is rural. A lot of every state is rural. All right, and
right.
It's extremely important that people understand that. And I want to ask that question the other way, okay? As you know, you're with CETI, with the State Department of Education, et cetera. Do the I'm using West Virginia, of course, you were there, okay? Do the citizens, the parents of West Virginia, okay, understand the need for more broadband, more connectivity? And again, I like the way you said that, beyond just hotspots. Hotspots are great, but they are spots, okay? That's what they are. They're spots, okay? And you use a Tide pencil or shout, spots come out, okay? That's not
right.
That's not permanent, okay? And it works for a short period of time. How are the communities, the people, literally, do they understand the need for all this, all the good work that you guys are doing, and how important is the push for this? Do they get it now, especially with the pandemic now, you know, teaching everybody a lesson?
Well, I think with the pandemic, especially, parents realized that, you know, when the students leave the school, there's, you know, in some cases, no connectivity. And so, again, we have worked really hard to help bridge that gap. Immediately, our governor put into place the hotspots at every school. So every school, every library, every state park, every higher education institution, the students can drive into the parking lot, and they can sit there and they can do their homework. Of all of those locations, because he does realize, and you know, the parents painfully so realized, you know, when students leave, that there's, you know, it, especially when we pivoted to remote learning, that became difficult, and there were students that just weren't able to connect to do their assignments, and that was something that our state superintendent and our state board were very concerned about. They felt that it was critical that we pivot back to in-person learning because of that inequity. They did not want to penalize the students that didn't have access. And, you know, once everybody here was back in person, just because they're in school during the day doesn't mean that they have equal opportunities when they go home to do homework. I mean, they can't just look up something online that other students...
Yeah, the homework app.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of people take that for granted, you know, when you're standing in the kitchen making dinner and you Google a recipe, you know, those kids just can't do that. And years ago we had an issue with our schools for the deaf and the blind. When they left school for the day and they went to the dorms right next to the school building, they had no more connectivity. So I worked with the E-Rate program, and I wrote a waiver asking them to allow connectivity in the dormitories. And that was not only approved, but it was made a national allowance so that all special schools could have connectivity. And I recognized that there, but I recognized it as well, you know, when the classroom doors close, that all of these kids go home, or they go from a school that has a gig internet service to a Meg DSL. And so, you know, it's definitely been something that's been a passion project of mine, looking at ways how
that's
can
great.
We, you know, expand fiber? How can we expand broadband into the communities? And so I was really excited when ECF came about because, you know, it was a way that we could start bridging that gap and working towards everybody having connectivity at home. So it's been pretty exciting. I'm really hoping that the FCC considers a third window because, you know, June 30th is just a few months away, and that's when the program in its current window will end. So hopefully we'll hear something soon so that we'll know if we are able to reapply for another year for additional funding to continue those services.
It's always frightening when you depend on the government dollars, and they always push that stuff to the brink, and you never know what's going on. So I hope that all works out. I have a question. You brought up something that struck me as very interesting. You know, you mentioned about the emergency broadband and the emergency connectivity funds. Then you said it's $50, $30 for the families. Who actually applies for that money? Is it up to the family to apply for the money, or is it up to the school district to apply or whatever? Yeah, how's that work?
So with the new, it's formerly the emergency broadband benefit. Now it's ACP.
Thank you. Yeah.
So that one, the families can apply. It doesn't just have to be students. It can be any person in the community that meets the financial requirements. And so there's also the ability for a school district to apply on behalf of students, but honestly, the emergency connectivity fund for schools is probably going to be a better way to go because of the fact that ACP did drop from the $50 a month subsidy to $30.
Right.
So that kind of impacts that. But also with the ACP, they – in tribal areas can get a bump up to $75 a month for areas that can only be served by satellite or have higher costs. You know, so that is something that's available. But that still doesn't fully fund satellite service. So there are also devices that can be purchased by the families or by the people that participate in ACP. And there is some skin in the game. They have to pay for a portion of that. But there are funds that are available that subsidize the cost of a device if there's not a device already at home.
Yeah, it's so tough, and it's so obvious. You know, the old TVA of the 1930s, we brought rural electrification.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and we got to do the same thing now with the internet. It's just so obvious, and we're working on it. Just anecdotally, mm-hmm. Julia, percentage wise or whatever. 100% being the best, 0% being the worst, on the level of taking care of students in schools with digital, we know how important it is. Where are we right now? What's your anecdotal thought?
That's really a hard question to answer.
That's why I asked you, because you're smart. You know the answer.
Because this has moved so fast, I don't think a lot of places have that data yet to know who has the need, who doesn't have the need. And a lot of it, too, is impacted by you've got the pandemic where unemployment has been kind of vacillating throughout. So a student that has the connectivity today may not tomorrow because mom and dad lost their jobs. It's really a moving target. I think that once we identified the issue, everybody is working towards gathering data. And so I think we're still in the data gathering stage.
That's a good answer, actually. Yeah. That is a
good
answer.
Well, it's the truth. We're still in the data gathering stage, and we're trying to kind of ascertain. I know West Virginia's Broadband Council has done a lot of work in determining where broadband exists, where it doesn't. But if you wanted me to come up with a percentage today, I think that would be really difficult to pinpoint because of how fluid this whole situation has been.
Are we 50% there? Are we 80% there? Are we 20% there? Top of your head. Boom. What's the answer? You know. It's instinctually you know. Okay? And your answer for West Virginia, I might add, is going to be about the same for any other state. Okay.
Well, I don't know necessarily that every state's going to be similarly situated to West Virginia. I think there are some states that, just due to their location, are doing better. You know, we have mountains that cost a lot of money to trench fiber up a mountain.
Oh,
so,
I know you do.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that there was a study that had come out that they were talking about how many people had connectivity. And when we got our initial data back, and mind you, we didn't have 100% responding. And that's part of the problem, too, is trying to get response information.
Well, of course, yeah.
And so, yeah. You know, we're not doing too bad. I want to be conservative here. I don't want to overestimate, but I don't want to underestimate. A safe spot to land would probably be 50%.
Okay.
But that's only because we don't have all the data. And, you know, once we are able to start collecting, and we've worked with our State Board of Education to, you know, start integrating that into the data collection that we do each year. But, again, once you have that data on that first day, that's not necessarily the data the rest of the year. And so,
that's true.
That's true. I think it needs to be something that we're constantly reviewing and revising and looking at that as a fluid data point, especially when it comes to looking at the need for connectivity funding. If the demand is at this point on usually we do data collections that are October 1. And so if the demand is at a certain place on October 1, well, you may have some situations where your unemployment rates go up, and so that's going to change that too. So I think it's definitely fluid, and we just do the best that we can do.
That's exactly right. That's all you can do. You do the best
right.
you can do. Yeah, that's a good thing. Okay, mm-hmm. That's a good thing. You do the best thing you can do. Okay?
Yes.
And
that's
you know, if you had your druthers, okay, and you could list priority, and believe me, you're thinking nationally as well as state. The two run together. What would be the first thing you would do? If you had all the money in the world to do it and do one thing, what would it be? What would be the top thing? Connectivity?
So.
Equity? What would it be?
Well, I think those go hand in hand, and I think you were talking about the rural electrification program, and I really think that if we want people to be able to work from anywhere, and that was another thing that was a huge pivot point for the nation, is people started to work remotely.
That's exactly
right.
I'll give you an example. Maine picked up, Maine, which has been losing population, where I live, picked up 10,000 people in the last year.
Wow.
Okay, people who realize they could move from the cities, if I may, to a rural area where real estate is more affordable and still work. Okay, and that's happening across the country. That's everywhere. It's happening in Canada as well. All right, so I'm sure it's happening in West Virginia. Yeah, go.
Right, and if we don't have the connectivity for people to pivot to be able to work from home, and we're really preparing our students to be in a workforce that nobody's ever envisioned before, really.
That's right.
It's something that we owe it to the students and the children that today never imagined, oh, I'm going to be working it from a home office. And so I think that if I had a magic wand, I would definitely say that, you know, we need to look at internet connectivity the same as we look at clean water. The same
Thank
as
you.
We look at electricity.
Thank you.
When the pandemic first happened and they sent the kids home, my 93-year-old grandfather, who, by the way, before he lost his vision to macular degeneration, loved the internet. He found the internet and he just
great.
Was obsessed
that is great.
With it.
That is great.
And so he kept asking me, like, how
That's
are these kids going to learn?
That's when he lost his vision. That he was on top of that, yeah.
And he's like, how are these kids going to learn? you know, they're not in school. And I said, well, we're trying to get money to be able to get them connected. And so every time I talked to him, he'd say, how's it going getting those kids online? And then, you know, last summer I was able to tell him, hey, we got the money from the federal government. They just need to put the plan together. And he was really excited. And unfortunately, that was the last conversation I got to have with him before he passed away.
Oh, sorry.
And so when the program rolled out, you know, I worked 24 hours above and beyond in the two-week period that I – West Virginia actually filed a state application on behalf of some of our school districts that wanted hotspots. And so I worked an extra 24 hours, and there were nights that I was just exhausted. I was just worn out, and I just kept thinking about my pawpaw. And I just kept saying, I'm doing this for pawpaw and for these kids because he knew
great.
It was so important. And so that's what got me through. But, you know, he really made a good point about the fact that a lot of us that have internet take for granted.
That's
and
right.
His excitement for learning, you know, the students who were able to just get onto the internet and go and look at a Khan Academy video to figure out a math problem.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
It's huge, the capacity that we'll have to reach that homework gap, you know, if we can just continue and sustain this program. So I hope
that we're able to
do that.
I'm going
to
tell you, I always recommend this. Okay, have you ever read the book Rocket Boys?
Actually, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, Homer Hickam. He's from West Virginia.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, he's one of my favorite books of all time, one of the great stories of all time. And my point of bringing that up is this. We can't afford to lose kids.
Right.
Okay? Education cannot be by zip code. It cannot be worse for a kid who lives at the end of a holler, okay, than it is for a kid who lives in downtown Charleston. Okay? You know, and that's Charleston, West Virginia in this case. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, or Wheeling or wherever. The point is we have to realize this. And the other thing is everything you do for the schools and connectivity, and you mentioned this a minute ago, but they have to be connected, is for the workforce. Okay? If a state like West Virginia, again, as an example, you're there, okay, is going to grow in the 21st century, it's what it did before. Coal mining, that's good, but that's leaving, all right, unfortunately. They're honorable profession, honorable people, but that is leaving, and technology is taking over, okay? And West Virginia, again, as an example, wants to be there. So everything you do for the school districts now is going to be able to continue to create your workforce, and the two things have to be put together constantly, and that's what the technology is all about in these days. How was that for a speech? And I believe it. How was that, Julia?
Well, I believe it too, because I'm the great-great-granddaughter of a coal miner and the great-granddaughter of a coal miner who is in technology now. So so I completely agree that it's going to open a lot of opportunities and doors for people in job searches, as well as being able to get remote jobs. I know West Virginia has a program for remote work that is bringing people in, and they are you know, encouraging that as an option. And so, you know, we need to look at those opportunities as, like you were saying, that is something that's going to open up a lot of opportunities for people. And I'm hoping it's going to bring an influx, like you're seeing in Maine. But, you know, we've got the Ascend West Virginia, where we have started encouraging that. And so we've got Lewisburg, Morgantown, Shepherdstown. These are all places that, you know, they're encouraging people to come in and see, you know, why we are called Almost Heaven. And so
thank you. Thank you, John Denver.
It's a beautiful place.
Mr. John Denver, yeah.
And so, you know, that was a grant program. And so that is something that, you know, the governor has, let me tell you, our governor has a heart for kids in this state.
Good.
And so
good.
That's always his first focus.
Nice to know.
And so, you know, he has talked about, and you know, people can say things, but he has actually put these into action. He made the hot spots at all of the schools, the libraries, the higher ed institutions, the state parks. But then he's also, you know, working on fiber programs so that he can expand that. He's working on these remote work opportunities so that we can bring people into West Virginia, but it also improves the situation for people that are already here. And so I think that it's going to take more than just the federal level sending money out. I think it takes leadership, and I'm really blessed that we
You're
have
right.
that kind of leadership here.
That's a nice thing to say. I'm glad you said that. Thank you. It's a really nice endorsement and nice to hear. And, you know, the fact of the matter is everybody needs to understand you don't have good schools, you don't have a good workforce, you don't have a good economy. You pay for it at the end. And it's like that old Fram oil filter. You can pay me now, you can pay me later. And it costs six times as much. Okay, and we need people like you at the top of these, top of this, okay, in the State Department to make this work. Julie, you're really a great spokesman for what's going on with ed tech these days, okay? Just terrific, okay?
Thank you
enough for being here. Hope you enjoyed yourself. I certainly did. Enjoy having you here.
I did. I loved it. It's great to be with you today, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you're welcome. Go out now and watch the snow melt away. I won't be able to do that. I can just watch a little bit of it melt away. You'll see it all go.
Well, I'm enjoying it each day.
Good. Enjoy it, okay? Julia, thanks a million. I'm so glad we got this together. You take care. Be safe, please.
You too. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Everybody, that's Julia Benincosa-Legg, and Julia is the state E-rate, fundsforlearning.com. Hate to put in a plug there for my buddy Harrington, okay, and ECF, Emergency Connectivity Fund Coordinator, with the West Virginia Department of Education. Okay, and you know her point that her great grandpa was a coal miner. Okay, this is an important thing right now to remember. Okay, the future. Okay, is going to depend on technology. Good for the schools. It's good for the state. Okay, we got to fund the right thing for the future. All right. Anyway, we're going to archive at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.